Welcome, everyone. I'm Amy Seeley, president of Seeley Test Pros, helping students to succeed on all kinds of tests from eighth grade to grad school in Cleveland, Ohio.
And I'm Mike Bergen, president of Chariot Learning, helping students with tests, school, and life based out of Rochester, New York.
Between the two of us today, we have over 50 years of experience at the highest levels of the test preparation and supplemental education industries.
We both love to talk and learn about the latest issues in education, testing, and college admissions. So let's get down to tests and the rest. The fascinating topic we want to explore today is applying to a military academy. But first, let's meet our special guest, Lisa Hillhouse.
Lisa Hillhouse is an independent educational consultant and the founder of Hillhouse College and Career Advising based in Atlanta. Prior to launching her practice, Lisa retired from the Air Force after 26 years of active duty and reserve service. Much of that time focused on officer recruitment and leadership development. Lisa began her admissions journey with a special assignment to Air Force ROTC at the University of California, Berkeley. She loved educating and mentoring young leaders and continued that work at the United States Air Force Academy as a deputy liaison office director and admissions liaison officer. There, she helped lead and manage one of the largest recruiting areas in the nation while evaluating and developing candidates for military careers. Lisa has a bachelor's degree in politics from Assumption College, a master's degree in human relations from the University of Oklahoma, and a college and career planning graduate certificate from the University of California, Berkeley. Lisa is nationally recognized for her expertise and specialty of guiding and supporting students through the complex process of becoming commissioned officers. Welcome.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Lisa, it is so great to have you on today. We're really looking forward to speaking about applying to military academy. But first, listening to your history, it seems like every step you took in life brought you right to where you are today. Can you tell us what inspired your initial step and then the path, the steps that followed?
Absolutely. So I work with these kids who are so focused and know from middle school what they want to do. And I was a first-gen student, and I knew I wanted to go to college and help people and live and work overseas. One idea I had was to join the Foreign Service Corps. And so I began college, and my freshman year, I had a big sister mentor in the dorm, and she was the Air Force ROTC cadet recruiting officer. And she said, I think you would be a great leader, and you have a lot of energy and enthusiasm, and you should join our program. And I thought, I've got nothing to lose. Why not? And so I had some family members who had been enlisted during some of the wars, but not really that military history. And I found that this gave me a community that nurtured me, that helped me get a scholarship, that really pushed me and, you know, opened that door to different opportunities in life. So, I'm actually still friends with Kara, the person who recruited me, and she's retired from the Air Force as well. So
oh, that's amazing. So you enjoyed the ROTC experience.
I loved it. Yes. It is a part-time leadership program. And so you're going to college, you're still having the opportunity to do all those things you're doing at a civilian college. So a little bit different experience than the academy, but the same outcome.
And then you were actually in the Air Force.
Yes. So I served 9 years active duty, which is full time. So that's longer than your initial requirement. And then I went into the reserves and did that for the latter part of my career, which is pretty typical.
And at what point did you start getting into the recruiting and almost the admissions? Because it sounds like while you were with the Air Force, you started to move towards your current career path.
Absolutely. So there's not a lot of people who spend most of their time in the Air Force on things like admissions and officer development. So I was a junior captain. I had this special assignment to teach ROTC. So I had come back from being overseas for several years. And that gave me a chance to get in the classroom and teach and also run admissions programs and leadership development. And I really, like a lot of your guests, found that passion for working with young people and that energy. What's funny to me is that some of those students are now retired from the military, and I don't know where that time went. It feels like just yesterday.
Lisa, do you have an official rank right now?
So I'm retired as a lieutenant colonel.
Okay, good. That's important. You've earned it. So you know a lot about something that people want to know a lot about, which is the military service academies. And some of them stand out as the most prestigious colleges in the nation. Can you tell us a bit about them?
Absolutely. So there are 5 federal service academies. They are public schools supported by the government, and they feed into the armed forces branches. So you have the United States Military Academy, which is West Point. You have the United States Naval Academy, known as Annapolis, the United States Air Force Academy, the United States Coast Guard Academy, and then the United States Merchant Marine Academy, also called Kings Point. So those schools are places where you're going to go and earn a bachelor of science degree, regardless of what you major in, whether it's English or aerospace science. You're going to have this ultimate experiential learning program. And so you are seeing, what will I do in my military branch? You're going to have a lot of leadership and moral and ethical development. You're going to be a scholar athlete as well. And then when you graduate, you'll be commissioned to go into the armed forces. So say you're at the Coast Guard Academy, you'll go active duty as a Coast Guard officer. The Merchant Marine is the one academy where you can go into the maritime industry and serve as civilian and also serve in the military reserves. But in general, you're going active duty to the branch for the academy you studied at.
Now, West Point and Annapolis are known as being very selective. Are the other academies as selective?
Absolutely. I think that the average, if you look at the average admissions profile, it's about a 386 out of a 4.0 unweighted. And the average ACT is about a 30, although I see students with much higher grades and test scores getting in. The academies are small. So Army, Navy, Air Force, called the Big Three, have about 4,000 cadets at any one time or midshipmen. The Coast Guard Academy and Merchant Marine are smaller. They're more like about 1,200 students. So just because there aren't a lot of spots makes it very selective, as well as having, you know, those high academic standards.
So beyond the academic criteria, can you tell us a little bit about, like, by law, what are some of the qualifications to be able to apply to a military academy?
Sure. So you need to be a U.S. citizen to enter and earn a commission, although we have international students, but they're not going to be commissioned in our branches. You need to start before you turn 23, July of your 23rd year. You can't have any military dependents, so not married, not pregnant, no children. And then you also need to have strong moral character. So they're looking for, you know, really outstanding kids. The other thing is too, the academies are a four-year experience. So you may go to college for a year and do ROTC, or maybe you're at a community college, but you still go for 4 years. You don't get to transfer.
Oh, that's interesting. You can't do a 2+2 to West Point. No. You're committed before.
One other question too, as far as, so if, for example, AP credit or something like that, you're not going to knock off time, you know, because you come in with a lot of academic credit, you're still going to be there for 4 years, regardless of if you've done dual enrollment or AP or something like that.
Right. And, you know, the students who get in there, many of them are taking, you know, lots of APs their last year, or maybe almost all APs. And so you're going to have your testing, and you might start, you know, in with differential equations, or maybe you've already had a year of college chemistry. So that could give you the chance to have a minor as well, or maybe start, in some cases, students are doing a little bit of graduate studies, or, you know, some research and other opportunities, but still 4 years.
Fantastic. So I guess one question then, a student might know that he or she wants to attend a military service academy. That's a dream of a lot of kids. How can they determine which one is right for them?
Oh, that's really a good question. So there are similar experiences, but every military branch has its own culture and its own identity. So I say to kids, what do you want to do after graduation? So say you're like, I'm interested in being a pilot. You know, you could do that at each of the academies. But if you want a large amount of aircraft and experiences, Air Force might be for you. You know, if you want to drive ships, it should be Navy or Coast Guard or Merchant Marine. You know, the Army, very infantry focused. And so think about where you want to wind up and what you want to do, because they're all going to give you great opportunities. Yes.
Makes perfect sense. All right. So let's get down to the nitty gritty then. What does applying to a military service academy entail? What are the ways in which this is similar to applying to any other college? And where does the path diverge?
Sure. So I'm going to be honest, it is a lot of work. It is a lengthy, complex process. And it terrifies a lot of kids and counselors. That's why they come to me for that help. What you do is you know, I have these hard and fast deadlines. So academies are not going to be flexible. Then we're going to work our way backwards from those. So there's a lot of room for error as well, which is why you want to begin early. So each academy will have their own application. It's not going to be a common app kind of situation. They're going to require official test scores and transcripts. You're going to need multiple letters of recommendation. So the academies will say, we want this English teacher and this math, but we also want a PE teacher, et cetera. Then you're going to need a congressional nomination. So that means you're going to apply to your congressperson and your senators. And those applications involve essays and interviews and transcripts and recommendations as well. You want to put together a strong resume. There's going to be a two-part medical exam. There's going to be a physical fitness test. And then most academies require the nominations like we talked about, and most require one or more interviews. So you cannot do this over the weekend.
So what would be your recommended timeline for a student to kind of probably, let's say, start or kind of engage in this process?
Absolutely. You want to start as early as you can. So I've had students come to me in the middle of eighth grade when they're planning their high school activities and courses. So that is pretty early, but there's a lot of middle schoolers or early high schoolers who know I'm called to service. So, you know, I love to do a little bit of work with those younger kids, you know, freshman, sophomore year, you know, we're very busy junior year and senior year, but the earlier you can assess if this is for you and do that research we talked about, the better off you're going to be.
So that's amazing. You know, a lot of times middle school is too early to start talking about college admissions, but not if you are on the path to a military service academy. How difficult and lengthy is the process of getting a congressional recommendation?
Absolutely. So you are starting those in the spring of junior year. And those applications are due generally before the academy applications. So the nominations typically open April and May. You're working on those in the summer. But they're, like we were saying, will often have a resume, recommendations, essay, application, test score.
Does everyone who requests one get one?
No, it's really hard to get one. So there are districts like DC where you have lots of Department of Defense, lots of military, and those certain students can have other pathways to nominations, like if you are a military dependent or your parents served, or maybe you're in a junior ROTC honor unit, or maybe you're in ROTC in college. There's other sources. But, you know, there definitely are students who aren't going to get one. And so more people get into an academy on their second go around. A lot of people don't know that.
Oh.
Yes. And it could be because of that nomination. It may be that their test scores weren't really strong, or maybe their high school academics weren't as good as they could be, but they had those other categories that were strong.
And what I think is interesting is that the nominations, like your congressperson, they can only have so many of their appointments in an academy at a given time. So it's not even like they can dole them out as much as they want. It's if they've got somebody already in an academy, they can't give an appointment or something like that?
Right. So for example, your local congressperson can have five students at the Air Force Academy at any one time. So he or she can nominate 10 students for one spot. So they're not going to have five freshmen going, right? Because then they don't have anyone going the following years. So unless that student gets into an academy and goes, it does not count against them for their quota. But yes, you know, you could, I've worked in areas where maybe two, three kids applied to an academy, and I've worked in districts where maybe 30 were applying to a specific one. So sometimes you luck out with that. Sometimes you do not.
Right. Sometimes right. You might even want to target certain under ambitious congressional representatives. Say, well, this guy doesn't have a lot of people at this school, so it might be a surer bet.
But it's not like you have to go to your, you know, representative in your area. You could get an appointment from somebody who's from another location too.
Actually, no, you do have to go to your district.
Oh, okay. So you are limited then by, there's only so many possibilities for who you can reach out to then.
Yes. But so every student has their congressperson and their two senators. As I said, some people can apply to the presidential, that's for military families, but all students can apply to the vice president. So for example, I'm working with a student right now in Ireland. He has to apply through the vice president because he doesn't have a domicile here in the States.
Interesting.
So Yes, but there is one thing people don't know. The Merchant Marine Academy is a little bit different, where you can apply to a second congressperson in your state. It doesn't have to be your district, but that's kind of a one-off.
That's handy.
Interesting.
So, all right, I could probably ask you a ton of questions about this, but you mentioned scores, and you mentioned that test scores, SAT and ACT scores, probably need to be high if you're applying to a military academy.
Absolutely. Honestly, the higher, the better. There's lots of controversy about test scores and so on. I mean, I've seen students get in with a lower test score for an academy, like a 26 ACT versus a 33, but they also were valedictorian and first to go to college and great leadership and, you know, lots of other things. So the academies will super score. So take that test, take it early if it's available, take it often if it's available. But I often have my students begin their test prep that summer before junior year if they're academically ready and timeline wise. And ideally they finish their test prep throughout junior year, but sometimes they're still testing senior year.
No, I agree with you 100%.
Is there a hard and fast time where they would have to have taken their test by generally?
Yes, by, you know, early winter senior year.
Okay.
Yes.
So typical. It's a typical timeline then.
It is. And each academy has a different deadline, but you're basically wrapping those applications up kind of that November to January timeframe.
Terrific. So what else is there? Are there any other aspects? Like you described the physical fitness test. Mm-hmm. You know, fortunately, even the Ivy Leagues don't require physical fitness tests. This is distinctive. How diligently do applicants need to train for that exam?
They need to train hard for that. So these are well-rounded students. So a typical student going into the academy may be a varsity athlete, maybe they're captain or co-captain of their team. You know, there's often Eagle Scouts, Gold Award winners, yes, kids with lots of student leadership, have their own businesses, pilot's license, things like that. So they're very impressive. So by, you know, having that good fitness score, that matters. Like you could be a football player and be really strong, but you're not fast. I've had football players fail the fitness test. Or conversely, maybe your sport is being a black belt in karate. So, you know, what if you go and fail that fitness test? So there's lots of resources online for that, but no, that's an important part. And in particular, certain branches put even more focus on that, such as Army and the Marine Corps as well.
So it's interesting. There's academic fitness, there's physical fitness. What about like even like mental fitness? I mean, this is a different kind of path. I'm curious what kind of way they evaluate, like you're making a commitment that's very different from the typical student making.
Absolutely. So that demonstrated interest in the military, that research, like doing their summer programs or maybe being in an ROTC or Civil Air Patrol program, that helps. But when I was evaluating candidates, you know, I want to know, how do you handle stress? How do you work with people different than yourselves? You know, what's the biggest obstacle you've overcome? So that emotional intelligence, that emotional resilience, the ability to handle stress, you know, being a courageous person, you know, taking that initiative, all that counts. And so that's where that interview process comes in. And that's also where the writing samples or essays, we want to hear about what experience you've had.
So the essays also carry weight in this process.
For sure. For sure. So sometimes I'll get an essay and a student will use all this Army lingo, but they're applying to the Naval Academy.
Not a universal language.
Absolutely. So it's important, you know, to work with a person who can guide and mentor you. You know, maybe your mom or dad was in the military. Maybe they have friends. But finding out what their experiences are and, you know, seeing how that matches with you is really important too.
Seems like an incredibly complex process and one that people would benefit from guidance. What are some pitfalls that you've seen people fall for along the way? I can imagine that one is just simply not knowing all of these different details.
Right. So the academies have really simple checklists on their websites, but it takes a lot of initiative and a lot of thought to follow through with this. And to be honest, 17-year-olds or 18-year-olds don't always have that life.
You don't think?
Sometimes we don't have it as adults. So I've definitely seen a lot of students who say, I'm training for my football season and I'll take my fitness test at the end of my season because I'll have peaked. But I can't tell you how many kids get injured and then they have their recovery time and their rehab and now they're not taking their fitness test for 2-3 months and that deadline is hard and fast and maybe they're not going to have as good a result. Also, 25% of applicants fail their medical exam. So maybe they're taking Accutane. Maybe they've had a lot of reconstructive surgery. Maybe they've had multiple concussions. So it doesn't mean that those things necessarily disqualify you, but they could. So the medical people will need your medical records. You might have to go see a specialist. So again, doing your medical exams early.
That's interesting. You can actually fail your medical exam for legitimate reasons. Right. I mean, you take that for granted in the world we live today, that kids do have to, you know, medical situations that they're
absolutely. So starting that early and then also having a backup plan. So for example, is my backup to apply to civilian colleges that have an ROTC program in the branch I want to go into. So knowing that, because more officers come through ROTC, knowing that, hey, this is my backup. Because when you're interviewed for academies and nominations, they want to know where you're applying to and what your backup plan is and see that you have that initiative and you've thought that through.
Yeah. And that's, that's something that a lot of students applying to any kind of college fail to consider, what the backup is, what the safety is, what happens if your dream doesn't come true for this particular college, how can you continue to pursue your actual goal?
Absolutely. And, you know, West Point will tell you it's not if you can get into West Point, it's when you can get into West Point. So I have actually sat on nomination boards where we've had people come for a third year in a row to get into an academy. Wow. So maybe they start.
But then they still have to do 4 years.
Yes, they do. So they start at college. Maybe they've developed more leadership. They might have enlisted in the reserves and be doing that training. They've worked on their standardized testing. They've gotten more experience. And when you know when those kids get to you and get an appointment, they're going to kick butt when they get there because they work so long and hard.
Yeah,
that's amazing. So it makes sense even for someone, no matter how soon they start thinking about this process, get a quick medical consult, like check and make sure that there's something that doesn't automatically disqualify you in your medical records, because it would be a heartbreaker to pursue every piece of this and then find out, oh, my allergies don't, you know, prohibit me from attending.
Absolutely. So I show my students the form that they're going to be filling out and say, take it to your doctor when you do your sports physical and talk about these issues. So I'm not a medical professional, but you know, there's certain things that come up constantly that people fail for. So yes, absolutely thinking that ahead. And that's when it's great to talk to me early and say, okay, I'm thinking about vision correction surgery. And I would say, don't do it. You know, that could be, certain types could be a disqualifier.
Oh, interesting.
That's smart. So Lisa, there's just so much involved here. What is one other thing that you would recommend anybody who's considering this process, and thinking ahead? And I mean, this is for counselors and parents, maybe students themselves, thinking about applying to a military service academy. What should they know? Right.
Say, do that research, communicate with other people, demonstrate your interest. So for example, say you want to go to the Coast Guard, go to the Coast Guard website, follow them on social media, see if you can find someone that can mentor you through that process. Apply to those summer training programs the academies offer. Read military books, stay up on the news. So just get a feel, is that a good culture and a good fit for me? And maybe it is, but maybe a different branch is for you. Or maybe it's not what you want to do, but maybe you could work as a civilian for that military branch. So absolutely doing that research, talking to people, starting early. I also love the programs like Junior ROTC or ROTC at the college level, things like Civil Air Patrol, Sea Cadets, Young Marines. So programs that are auxiliaries of the military. And usually there's a program like that near you. It may not be at your high school, or maybe it's a little farther away, but that's a great way of seeing, am I good at this? Do I like this?
That's amazing. Well, I know we could talk about applying to a military academy all day, but unfortunately we are out of time. Thank you so much, Lisa, for joining us today.
It has been a delight. Thanks for having me.
If listeners would like to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Absolutely. So go to my website, which is Hillhouse, Hillhouse, collegeadvising.com. There's information about my background and services and also articles that I've either written or have been part of. And that gives you a lot of tips in there as well.
Awesome. We hope you enjoy this discussion as much as we did. Be sure to join us for another fascinating topic and guest on The Next Test and the Rest.
Did you enjoy this episode as much as we did? Find expanded links and more for this and all of our episodes at our show page at testsandtherest.com. While you're there, be sure to explore everything the larger TestBrite site has to offer, including real, expert, unbiased answers to the toughest admissions testing questions. Of course, we'd love for you to rate, review, and subscribe to Tests and the Rest on your favorite podcast platform. If there's a topic or guest you'd like us to feature, just let us know and spread the word.